Hi, this is Glenn Mulcahy, your host for Love What You Play, Digital Summit and Podcast. And our next guest is someone I'm really excited to have a chat with. We connected a few years back, and this is a reconnect a few years later. Her name is Janice Meredith. She is the founder of Raising Champion Families, a mother of three children who were really avid sports in the sports world from the age of four all the way through college, and has developed a passion for helping families whose kids are also active in sports. Been an active blogger for a number of years as certified life coach, wants to help families reestablish their connectivity so parents can navigate children's challenges. And she's partnered with a number of different organizations, one being USA Football, Team Snap, University of Miami Health System, and others, so that we can help navigate and help parents and families raise champion kids. So thanks for joining us, Janice. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, it's great to see you, Glenn. And it's awesome that we're so far apart. I mean, we couldn't be any further apart. Canada and Florida, you know, but here we are talking like we're sitting in our living room.
Yeah, I know. It's funny when we originally connected a few years ago on that mastermind, and I thought about that. You were about as far south from where I'm at, as far north outside from going to like the Alaska area. And I remember I've gone to Orlando maybe three times, you know, Disneyland and the touristy stuff. Getting there from Vancouver is not easy. You have to either connect through Toronto or another hub, and it's a full day travel to get there. Yeah. So anybody kind of doing that eastern western swing. So great to connect with you again. So I'm curious, and I ask this to everybody, is this, where did you grow up? What did you play? Because you've raised three really active kids. So I'm wondering if that genetic kind of carried from your growing up.
I grew up in Florida. I was the youngest of six, and I played sports when I was younger. Back when I played, it was not anything like what it is now. The level of competitiveness was much less, and there wasn't all the club travel and everything. But I did play a little bit of softball at my school. I was a cheerleader, and that's it. I didn't pursue it at all past high school. My husband played athletics, and then he was also a coach, so that it was kind of, I always loved sports though. I was raised in a family that loved sports, so we just kind of, our kids just grew up in that atmosphere of loving sports, and naturally they started playing it too.
So they all started as early as four with all three of them. They jumped into it. And how many different sports? Because one of your things on your bio is you're chauffeuring them all over the place. And I can relate to that all too well, even though my two have aged out, same kind of deal.
Yeah, three kids, and they're about 3 years apart. So obviously they didn't all start right at the same time. But once they all got into it, they all played almost all year. Now, not the same sport all year round. They had a lot of variation in there, but at any given season, most likely all three of them are doing something. So it was, and then on top of all that, my husband was coaching football. So it was crazy.
So basically two car family, chauffeur, and figure out, we, the one thing that we don't miss about sports, and I guess benefit of the COVID is the home cooked meals, like sit down meals with the family. Versus the soup and sandwich nights and running to Subway.
Yeah.
I guess there's a lot of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a lot of crock pot cooking back in the day. ready to put the door.
Try to plan the mail. So one of the groups that you're working with is, maybe we'll go backtrack a little bit. When we originally connected a few years back, we kind of did this on a pre-call. Your original organization was JBM Thinks, and it has now evolved to Raising Champion Family. So maybe give us a little insight of how that evolution took place.
Yeah, because when I originally started, I was really, I just started blogging, and then I kind of got my focus at that time to focus on sports parents. And because that was what I was living, and I just saw the dysfunction in youth sports, and I saw that the lessons that my kids were learning. And so I just really wanted to help parents see that, the vision of letting their kids learn. And so I really focused on that. Over the years, I would get a lot of parents asking questions about, you know, this problem with their kid or that problem with their kid. And then my own kids grew up, went through college. They're all out of college and off on their own now. So I just started feeling that I wanted to be able to help all families, not just parents of athletes, but all parents. A lot of the parents that I do connect with do have kids in sports, because there's so many kids in sports these days. But I just felt like I didn't want to just limit it to sports parents. I wanted to be able to help all families, because I believe our kids can be champions, not just in the game, but in life and in how they connect with others and how they grow up. So that was what my thinking was.
Okay. And that, how long ago was that when you made that transformation?
It was probably within, probably about 2 years ago, I started shifting it over.
And so working with parents, raising champion kids, some well-rounded kids in a sense.
Yeah. Kids that grow up to be full of integrity, compassion. They're strong, trustworthy. They know how to face adversity. I see that a lot with my kids now, but, they're ready to take on life and to do it in a way that is good with other people, not selfishly take it on, but that they're being able to connect with other people and be helpful with other people. Those are champions to me.
Yeah. And those life skills, if coaches actually are reinforcing that through their coaching practices, that kids can get out of sport, but if they're not, it'd be an opportunity to get elsewhere. So we're talking about COVID, and I know that we're coming out of it in some respects, and we're not coming out of it in other respects, depending on where you are across the world and the challenges we're facing. Is that one of the biggest things you've been dealing with the last few months and working with families, especially the kids that were deprived of school and sport?
Yeah, I've had a lot of conversations with parents about this. The challenges of, well, first of all, the grief of having your sports ripped. But my own husband and my daughter were in the middle of softball season, coaching high school softball, and it was gone. And it was the first time that they were able to coach together. This was like a big deal that they were able to finally, dad and daughter were coaching together, and they were so excited. Well, they never got to finish the season. They'll do it again next year. But for a lot of parents, the kids, especially if your kid loves sports, this was a hard thing for them just to, like, it's just like cutting you off, you're done. And, that in itself was hard. And then there's the challenge of, gosh, keeping your kids busy and keeping them motivated. Like, how do you keep them motivated to not just sit around and do nothing for 3 months and then all of a sudden they're back playing sports again, So I did address a lot of those issues in different conversations and in different blogs that I wrote, just encouraging them to look for ways to continue to work on their skills and things like that, and encouraging the parents. It's hard for kids to look at this and say, oh, I can't wait, this is over. We as adults say, it's a season, it will pass, but kids are a little bit more impatient. So I'm sure it was very difficult for a lot of families.
I read recently, and I'm going to have to go digging for the article again, Wisconsin, I believe, was the state, did a survey of about 3,000 athletes. And they were documenting just how impactful that hiatus, that, closure of sport, closure of schools had on the kids' mental health. Is that a discussion that's come up at all in terms of anxiety, depression, what have you?
Yeah, that's definitely something that a lot of parents, I've heard of more than one. I heard of a child, 11-year-old, that committed suicide. I've heard of several things like that, because the kids all of a sudden, had everything ripped away. And I'm sure that there was other extenuating circumstances to that one particular incident, but definitely depression. And a lot of kids have been dealing with depression and, not having that contact for kids in sports. That is their social life, a lot of them. And so to have that ripped away from them, is hard. And parents are, and the thing is that parents are dealing with their own stuff, they're dealing with their own worries, their own stress. And so then they have to take on all this with their kids too. It's a lot to handle as a family.
And you add the homeschooling slash home work at home component, and everybody's kind of cooped up inside. I mean, we're fortunate in Vancouver that we've kind of come into phase 2/3 where we're now able to, and probably the biggest celebration I have is kind of funny, was when I got my hair cut like last week. I you have no idea how much I penciled it in. It was 3.5 weeks before I could get in to get my hair cut. But like it, like my hair doesn't do this, it goes like this. Mm-hmm. And I had a few interviews for this upcoming summit with, and I was trying to get it down, stuff like that. I finally had that haircut last Friday. I was like, okay, now we're returning to some sense of normalcy, but coming back to the kids that were deprived of, you know, not only graduations, I have a niece and a nephew that both graduated from high school this year, had to do it quasi virtually. And now you're starting to see more of that come up. The extremes though, in terms of anxiety, depression, is that something that will, you think will boomerang back now that we're starting to see some sense of normalcy, or is it going to continue to be an issue?
Well, I mean, I think in Florida here, they're allowing them to play sports. So they're going back. My husband is coaching football and they're slowly scaling it in very subtly. You can't go through something like this as kids, even that it's going to make an impact. I feel like a lot of how the kids react to this coming out of this is going to be dependent on how well the parents come out of it. So if the parents set the pace of, you know, trying to be positive and, you know, encouraging them, and the parents have got to set the pace and the kids, you know, who knows? I mean, I feel like we'll be hearing COVID stories for years, and we'll be hearing things that happened to people and hard things that happened and depression. And, you know, it's not going to just end because, you know, businesses start opening. This has made an impact on families and emotions in people that could be, you know, long-term. We just don't know. We'll see, I guess, as people start talking about it more and we hear more and more stories. But I wouldn't say just because everything's opening up that everybody's going to be all better, you know?
Yeah, I kind of relate. I mean, when this first shook down and my whole world revolved around live events, you know, travel across the country, work with sports organizations, and March 13th, Black Sports Friday, was my acronym for it, when the world as we know it came to a grinding halt, it even hit me. I'm like, whoa. And it was a few weeks before I started looking, okay, we've got to continue to start moving this way. But I know a lot of people I talked to, there was a few weeks, even as an adult, it was tough. Yeah. And now that we're slowly but surely seeing that normalcy, the big unknown is what that new normal is going to look like down the road. And has that been a discussion with parents as the kids are returning back to sports? I know a lot of the sports in Canada particularly are more on a skill development. So a lot of the people I've talked to, they call it returning to training instead of returning to play. But other states in the U.S., they're going right full to return with practices. Is that what's happening in Florida?
I can't speak to all the sports, but my husband is a football coach and they have allowed them to go back. And they started off the first 2 weeks with just 60 minutes of conditioning every morning. They take all the temperatures of the students, every one of them. They ask them like 5 questions when they get there. They're all outside. They don't go inside at all. And then after 2 weeks of that, they move into an hour and a half. They extend it by another 30 minutes and they allow them to do a little bit more. So it's just a very slow thing. I have no idea what the fall is going to look like. I mean, my husband's a teacher. He still doesn't know what school is going to look like in the fall. So I think it'll be a combination of things. But as far as sports go, I don't know what they're going to do. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody knows at this point, you know, because there's just so much still up in the air, literally.
Yeah, literally. And it varies by sport and or I guess what level it's at. If you look at the professional sports, they're scrambling to try to salvage a season or start a season. So NHL and NBA, and then they're starting to have some COVID positives and they're kind of having to revisit that a little bit. NFL is recently announced, I saw in the paper today, they're going to cancel their first 2 exhibition games. Although they think their season is going to continue from that point going forward. But in Canada, Canada West and the other U sports, the university sports, two weeks ago, canceled their fall season, which does affect football, which is tough because football in Canada is nowhere near as big as it is in the U.S. Like, you've got 80,000 people in your facilities for college. We have maybe 8,000 seats, but it's one of the big drivers for the varsity sports. And not having that in the fall, a lot of the universities, especially the smaller ones, are like, this is going to really hurt us. And the big unknown is, you know, how they're going to recover from that. So has that been a discussion? I know that, for example, Team Stamp is one of the organizations you work with. Mm-hmm. I saw in April, their revenue dropped 80% because of all the youth sports groups not happening. So any dialogue with them of how that's slowly going to come back?
Well, I do know that we had to put the brakes on our relationship for a few months because they were just like the one person that I was working with. She said she was leaving. You know, they were just slowing down. They weren't, you know, they weren't sure when they were going to start off. Well, they've recently connected with me again. So I think they must feel that things are starting to pick up so that they can, you know, start to focus on their online presence again. So I haven't actually talked to them specifically about that, but, you know, we've talked about, for instance, the next article they want me to write is about, you know, parents who don't send their kids to daycare or camps in the summer. What are they supposed to do with them? You know, they don't feel safe doing it. So what are the other options? So I've been working on that for them. But, you know, I only go on what I see around me, and that is in Florida and the sports that are starting up. I know that baseball's starting up, and you know, I don't know what they're going to do with it when it comes to the fall, though. I mean, it's anybody's guess at this point. I'm sure they've all talked about it, but it remains to be seen.
Did you hear about the baseball tournament that was held Mother's Day? I think it was in St. Louis. Right in the midst of COVID, no one had even taken the brakes off or started slowly easing back. Something in the area of 47 teams.
Oh, wow.
Mother's Day weekend in like May.
Yeah.
And then a month later, I don't have the acronym on top of my mind, but there was a huge volleyball tournament that was going to be hosted in June. They postponed it to July because a bunch of teams pulled out of it. They were projecting 15,000 people coming to the tournament. And then you've got other sports that are completely shut down. Is that it's kind of a similar trend that you're seeing in the U.S. where some are very leery and some are just like, we're just going to go?
Yeah, I think it probably depends on where you are. I mean, I feel like a lot of the states in that didn't have a huge problem with COVID are just barreling through. But I mean, I would hope that like Florida and I think California, that they're, I'm sure California is being more cautious, and New York and, you know, because, you know, I mean, sports is important, but it's okay if we don't, you know, they can live without it for a little bit. That's a little secret there. Kids can live without it for a little bit. And if we as adults and parents have the positive attitude with it, and you know, encourage them, it'll happen again, it'll be back. You know, I guess this is a good season for them to learn that life is not all about youth sports. You know, that's just, I mean, we tried to teach our kids that from the get-go. There's other life things to do in life besides play sports, even though they all played it through college and it was obviously a huge part of their life. So this is one of those opportunities that we say, okay, what are we going to do with it? Parents, are we going to, you know, tear our hair out and go crazy? Or are we going to say, okay, let's see, what can we learn from this? What do our kids need to learn from this? And how can we best help them learn it? So as tough as it is, it's something, a good conversation to have with our kids.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm kind of curious where your thoughts are on it, pre-COVID, there was a lot of push for travel, the travel ball, the monetization, the winning at all costs, and the early sports specializations. So in your discussion we've had with people the last few months, has there been any easing up on that, or are parents coming out of this with the same or even higher expectations because potentially they are infected monetize wise, where they've got to really chase the dream in terms of pro contract or NCAA scholarship. I'm just curious on that front.
Yeah, I think it's too early to tell at this point. I mean, because things are just starting to open, I think it's too early to tell whether parents feel panicked or even athletes like, oh no, I got to catch up, you know, because everybody's in the same boat. Honestly, okay. It's not like, oh, I broke my leg and I can't play sports for 6 weeks, or 8 weeks or whatever. I'm going to fall behind everybody. No, they're all in the same boat. So I would hope that there would not be that sense of panic. And also that, you know, yes, your kid wants to play in college. And I was thinking about this earlier today because I did read the questions through that you suggested. And I thought, what if this had happened to my child? What, and they would have, because they all played in college. So what if they were looking at their freshman year and they weren't sure what was going to happen? What would I say to them? And I just thought, I guess my thought would be to, first of all, ask them, do they still want to play anyway at some point, like even if it's a year later, is that still what they really want to do? And if it is, and they're not allowed to play for this fall, I would just, you know, encourage them to keep working hard, kind of like be their own red shirt, you know. My son had to actually sit out a year of football because of a back problem. So, but yet he came back the next year and played again. So it's not the end of the world if we have to push things off, if they can't play. It's not the end of the world. As long as they keep working and keep working on their skills and their conditioning and find ways to continue to be good as athletes, this isn't the end. This is just a pause maybe. And they can get through it and they will be playing again.
And then the big unknown is just what that new normal will be. And, you know, no one has that crystal ball and how far out it's going to be. When some sports are being canceled completely, some are kind of starting to back. I'm curious how football will do that, because I think that would be one of the sports that would probably have to wait the longest because of the size of the teams, for one, and two, the contact. Like, unless we went to a flag football model on much smaller scale. So that'd be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll just have to see. I mean, they haven't said anything about changing that. I think they recognize that the risk is lowest for kids in that age group. And so what's more important for them is to have the academic and the athletic pieces of their life. And I think that the big concern for me, I was thinking more than the kids on the field, was the player or the spectators in the stands, because they're all squished together. My husband actually coached for a team last year that did not have very good spectator attendance. So I thought, well, they won't have a problem because everybody was social distancing anyway. So you know, that's an issue. But I don't know. I really can't tell you at this point what they're going to do. I mean, I think my husband feels like they're going to proceed, but, you know, he doesn't know for sure either.
Yeah, and the big challenge you're saying is on the fans and the spectators. My blog I wrote last week was about one of the private managerial groups that runs a bunch of multi-sheet ice sheets, our facilities, and they are trying to revamp their youth and their adult recreational hockey programs. They're working with Bauer, who makes the helmets, who is now actually doing facial protection, to not only come up with facial protection for the players, but also for the coaches, the on-ice officials, and even for the spectators. So it'll be kind of interesting to see, you know, how the hockey model will evolve in the fall, and in addition to some of the other sports. So, you know, the one thing that is, I guess, the positive is we are slowly coming out of the bubble. But the biggest concern, and what's your take on, if we rush it too fast, do you think the outbreak could be worse or better, or could we lessen the curve?
Well, gosh, Glenn, you're asking me medical questions now, and I'm not qualified to answer that.
I'm not trying to put you in a hard spot. I'm just curious in terms of conversations, like, because we are completely polar opposites, country,
I do listen to a lot of parents, and I see both sides. I see parents that are that, hey, you know, we're fed up with this. We want to send our kids to school, you know. And other parents are like, no, we're too scared. We're going to homeschool. And that's why I think down here, they're giving the parents a choice. And they have to decide by sometime in July, whether they, you know, and there could be different models of it. I feel like, you know, we have to be cautious and do the right thing, but I don't feel like we need to. Life doesn't need to end for these kids, and things don't need to be stripped away from them consistently because of it. If anybody does have a specific issue, then please, yes, take the precaution. And if you're, you know, if your child has an immune problem or something, take those precautions. But immunity is something that gets built up, and these kids, you know, being out around each other, I mean, I know that they have to take precautions, but I just hope that they don't strip everything away from them, because I think that doing that is counterproductive for these kids, really.
Yeah, because you've got the other component, the lack of social emotional and the lack of the impacts having on their mental health, which that study we referred to earlier is having. And it's kind of interesting. Would you say it's a 50-50, like 50% like yes, and based on your discussion, you have a lot of parents, or?
Well, let's see. Our local school board actually did a survey and asking parents, you know, how many of them wanted their kids to go back in the fall and how many of them didn't. And I think it was more than 50% that said yes. It was like 60, 70%. Yes, we want our kids to go back, maybe with some precautions. And the rest were like, no, we don't. So, I don't know if that's true across the state or across the country. My guess is I listen to a lot of parents around the country, and I feel like a lot of them are like, okay, we're done. We're done with this. Okay.
Yeah. That's why you've got some that are opening way up. I know governor is saying, you know, we can't keep holding people back. It is frustrating, but at what point can you, that's the word I'm looking for, overprotect or underprotect? And you've got age groups that are really suspect to it, and then other ones that are not so much. Yeah. Curious in terms of your work in general and getting away from COVID, what is the main focus of the work that you do and kind of guidance you do with families?
I do a lot of writing, obviously, but I also do coaching. I work with families, one-on-one or one with the parents, like me with just the parents. I also do online classes. I'm starting next month in a thing called Raising Champion Families University, where once a month I'm going to do a webinar on a specific parenting topic. And so, you know, like the first one we're going to talk about is, you know, building your patience when your kids drive you crazy. So it's going to be about, you know, 30, 45 minutes. And I'm just going to give them some real practical tips on how to deal with that. So the education piece, the, you know, helping parents that, and then working with them individually when they need it to sit down and coach them through and help them find solutions for their problems. That's what my focus is right now. And I work with parents that have issues, and then parents that just want to be good parents. You know, they don't necessarily have any issues. So
on the latter, it's more how they can better support their kids and their aspirations, whether it be athletics or education or what have you.
Yeah. I think a lot of the times though, I deal with parents and helping them understand their own reactions and how they handle things, because, you know, a lot of times the problem is not our kids' behavior. It's how we respond to it and how we handle it. So helping them deal with situations, communication in the home. For instance, I worked with a dad who had two teenage sons, and he struggled in communicating. So we talked about love languages. We talked about, you know, what does good communication look like? And it totally changed the way he communicated with his boys. And so, you know, things like that that help us. I like to give tools to parents to help them do their job better, because we all have tools. We just sometimes we use the wrong tools. We use guilt or shame or whatever when we should use other tools. And so my desire is to give parents the right tools that will help them be able to do a good job in their parenting.
Gotcha. In terms of how people can, like, for example, your online training that you're starting up, how are you going to do that? And how many people can you accommodate? Are you looking for large groups? Are you looking for more intimate groups, like, you know, 30, what have you? Because I'm thinking from my world, and we're still trying to figure out how we're going to do this. Like, I've done clinics for the last 10 years for hockey hand clinics for BC Hockey. And normally we have 30, 40 coaches in those workshops. Well, now you've got the internet access, and we're going to be hosting this summit where we're going to have hundreds of people actually attend the live portion of it. So I'm just curious how you're planning, because I'm guessing, and the reason where I'm going with this, your work is more intimate, like kind of trying to engage versus an en masse. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yes and no. I mean, I do work with individuals, but in these online classes, it's more of a one-way thing. I'm not necessarily, I like to say there's three obstacles that parents have to getting some parenting help. One of them is, they don't have the money, they don't have the time, and they have a stigma about asking for help. So the money, these are very inexpensive courses. Number two, the time, they're 30 to 45 minutes, they're recorded, you can listen to them whenever you want. Number three, nobody has to know you're there. You can like sneak in the back of the classroom and sit there, and you know, I'm not going to call you out. It's just me giving information and me teaching and me talking. So there's no, in this particular setting, there's no need for them to feel like they have to participate.
So the upside for you is you could have hundreds of people basically logging onto it to get the training they need. What are some of the big areas that you have focused on, not away from the COVID world, but going into that, just helping parents and en masse, particularly on the sports side, because that's kind of where we are hearing a lot of the pain points. Not even with the COVID discussions, but, you know, how do we navigate? How do we understand the youth sports? Should we have our kids in travel ball? Should we chase the dream, et cetera, et cetera? Are those kind of the discussions you had and or any other ones?
Oh, yeah. Over the years, I've addressed all of the above. You know, travel ball and, you know, obviously specialization, just how to get along with coaches and teammates and how to be a team player and how to deal with, you know, athletes who are struggling with being too hard on themselves or struggling with motivation, or how to deal with sports parents and their own emotions about, you know, maybe expectations of their kids. I mean, every aspect. I mean, I've probably addressed every aspect you can think of when it comes to parents and youth sports over the years. So, it's still applicable, because parents are parents. And youth sports is still around, and it's going to be around, and it's evolved into this huge thing that it's got its pros and its cons. I mean, it's good, but there's so many things that are not good about it too. And so I think that, you know, it's kind of like the snowball that just has picked up more and more steam as it's gone downhill.
And in terms of that snowball, how do we, well, it's a good analogy, melt it. Slow it down. I mean, in Florida, it probably wouldn't be as big a deal as it would be in, you know, Colorado. But what are some of the top pain points or top issues that you think we still need to address?
I think for parents, it's got to start with the parents, and for the parents to have a realistic view, first of all, of what they want. Why do they want their kids to play sports? What is the motivation? You know, let the kids also be the driver of that. Like, let them drive the bus. Let them be involved in making the decisions, especially as they get older. This is not a parent run. I mean, I know the parents volunteer for it and do stuff, but this should be driven by what the kids want and what they want to do. And so I guess just, and then helping parents to see the big picture. It's easy for me as a mom to look back. My youngest is 27. My oldest is 32. And so to look back on their experience and look at them now and say, oh my gosh, they learned so much from playing sports. It's easy for, hindsight's always 20/20. So, you know, but it's so true, because the lessons that their kids are learning are going to make them better. My kids aren't still playing sports. Your kids don't play sports forever. I don't care, even if they play through college, they're not playing forever. So what are they going to carry out of that? When their glory days are over, what's still going to be there? And I think if parents could just focus on that more, that the snowball would start melting a little bit.
Yeah, I can relate to that too well, because as not only a coach, but also a parent, my coach on a lot of teams, when my son dropped the "I'm quitting," and I was like, what? And that came completely out of the blue. And no fault of, you know, being over, being pushed to play sport. It's just that he wanted to try and sample a bunch of other things. Instead of me asking the beginning of every season, do you still want to do this? And what I encourage all parents to do now is make sure before you sign your kids up for the sport, they still want to play the sport.
Like, right.
Because they may just be doing it to appease you as a parent. Because in essence, some live vicariously through their kids. What are some other tips that you can give parents before a season that you've done?
Maybe sit down with your kids and talk about what they want to achieve in that season. What are their goals for that season? Help your kids learn the value of goal setting, and then how to measure those goals. And they don't all have to be necessarily, well, I want to be able to score this many points or whatever, but even goals in their own character, like being able to be a leader or a team player, and what does that look like? And I think a lot of times parents just sign their kids up and then they don't give it another thought, unless their kid isn't playing, and then they start complaining. But what if we were to sign our kids up and then to sit down and talk with their kids and say, hey, what are your goals for the season? What would you like to see yourself do better at, and have more conversations about it, instead of just looking at that as a babysitter or a time filler. But because there is gold in there. It is to be found in character building for your kids. But I think parents have to be more involved in that and not just leave it up to the coaches to do that, because there's so much opportunity there that I really feel parents are squandering it because they're not taking advantage of it.
Yeah, and one of the other things that has come up, a lot of my talks when I've been traveling, and even locally in Vancouver, when I get on the subject of specialization, and I try to encourage parents to have their kids sample as many different sports, not just sports, but activities like drama and music, and computer science, what have you. Yeah. I get a lot of parents will say to me, well, but my son or my daughter just loves playing this sport. How do you address that with parents? Do you support their, you say, hey, should you try some other things? I'm just curious on that front.
Well, first of all, I would ask them to really sit down and listen to their child and say, you know, is this the only sport you want to play? But then I would also encourage them with the facts. And the facts are that you are actually, most of the time, you're a better athlete when you cross train and when you do other things that, like, for instance, like I said, my husband coaches football, but he loves it when his football players play track or basketball because he feels that it makes them good in other ways. And so if we can realize that, no, your kid doesn't have to excel in another sport, but what if they went and just, my daughter was not very good necessarily at track, but she went and did it just for the fun. She was focused on volleyball, but, you know, and she also played basketball, but what if they just said, I'm just going to do it for fun. I'm going to go play golf, or I'm going to play tennis, or I'm going to try another sport for fun, because, you know, learning those other sports can help them develop other muscle memory things that will help them in the sport that they truly love. So even though your kid says, I only want to play baseball, I mean, it depends on the age. If they're in high school and they're saying that, you know, I would let them know.
Yeah.
But if they're
9
years old and they're saying it, I would say, hey, you know what? let's try some other things too, because you just may like them, you know?
And sorry, I didn't want to cut you off, but I agree. I mean, there is a point where you do have to make that decision to specialize, but there's the other side of the coin where there's athletes, and the word athlete, if you look at Patrick Mahomes, he drafted, it could have been playing professional baseball, decided, no, I'm going to go into the National Football Draft, and he's one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen. Like, I mean, and I've been a big follower of football for a very long time, and there's so many other examples of that. But the football, to me, it was kind of like a late bloomer sport. Like, you could pick it up if you were an athlete, whereas some other sports may be early. So you have to kind of – it's the 6, 7, 8-year-old kids.
Yeah.
They're playing one sport year-round. That's just getting me. I just think they're missing out on so much, and they should be just kids and then just trying a whole bunch of different things. That's where I really try to discourage parents from having their kids specialize.
I mean, my youngest daughter, for instance, she tried ballet. She tried gymnastics. She tried a bunch of different things. And, you know, eventually she came back to team sports because that's what she loved. And, you know, but let them experience the different things as much as you can with that your time and your money allows, let them experience it and find out, you know, what they really love to do.
Yeah. Couldn't agree with more, because the emphasis on loving that. And when they find the one that they love later on, they're probably going to pursue it even beyond high school, play it recreationally as an adult and what have you. So great advice. Do you work with just parents, or you also work with parents and their kids? Just curious.
Mostly just parents. I have had conversations with parents and their kids. Mostly if it's when they're older kids, like teenagers maybe, but mostly it's just the parents that I deal with. I don't consider myself necessarily an expert in working with kids. In that sense, I feel like my desire is to help the parents and help them see clearly and have the tools that they need. So
aside from the sport guidance, what other areas do you help parents with in terms of raising their kids? Kind of touch on it earlier, but kind of get into the products and services that you offer.
Well, I do offer a whole variety of coaching options as far as different particular packages. For instance, there's 3 session packages where we talk about, one of them is about communication, one of them is about knowing your child's love language, and one of them is about dealing with your child and giving them a positive sports experience. So there's small packages, there's options for longer term coaching. There's plenty of resources to read on my website. There's videos on my website. There's the Raising Champion Families University with the one webinar a month starting soon. So there's several different options. There's literally something for every parent. I mean, if you don't have any money to spend on this, there's plenty of free stuff on there. If you want to dig deeper, then, you know, there's an opportunity to spend some money, which is funny because parents don't like to usually spend money on themselves, but they'll spend it on their kids.
Yeah, you know, and it was staggering, the amount of money. And that's the big question I'm curious about. Cost per capita in the U.S., the youth sports industry had grown to $19 billion-ish pre-COVID. In Canada, it hit over $9 billion. So cost per capita, we're a tenth the size of the U.S., but we're spending, you know, almost half of what you spend on youth sports. And many of the parents putting their kids into academies or the travel, the elite, same thing in the States. But do you think that bubble would burst regardless if COVID hit us? Because I know financially a lot of people are going to be coming out of that going, I don't know if I can afford the travel ball. I don't know if I can keep my kids in the academies. I'm just curious if any of those discussions have happened.
Well, I think I haven't had them discussions, but I definitely think that pre-COVID, some of the discussions about the cost of it, astronomical, that parents were spending on their kids. I do think that some of that's going to have to be curbed, because a lot of those families are going to be financially strapped, and things are going to be tighter for them. So it's going to trickle down and affect the the youth sports industry, I believe, unless they find other ways to make it available without costing so much. You know, I don't know what that would look like, you know, maybe it would be more a community thing instead of, you know, a club thing. You know, I know that club ball gets very expensive. I mean, all three of my kids played it, and it's even more expensive now, I'm sure. And a lot of parents just can't afford that. So, but there's other options. And I think that if we get creative and we are willing to continue to work hard, if the athlete is willing to work hard and the parents need to get creative, then there are other ways to get it done.
Yeah, it's just a matter of everybody buying into that creativity instead of having a competition, because it's one of the big things I got from a lot of parents that I talk to. You know, it's like a competition. And even, and I'll leave it kind of on a last note, my sister-in-law shared with me that my nephew wanted to try out for rep hockey, which is the competitive stream. He also was an avid soccer player. And in British Columbia, that model, they compete directly in the same season. They're both fall sports in the lower mainland of British Columbia. But when he went to try out for hockey, there was parents who were saying, hey, you're going to have to sign a contract that you're only going to play hockey and you're not going to play soccer. And I'm like, what? You know, like, and we're talking like the whole multi-sport and the benefits of becoming the best athlete. So I'm curious, as a last note with your kids, they started at four, went to university. When did they all kind of find the one that they loved the most, out of curiosity?
Well, my oldest daughter played softball. I think she found when she was in middle school and she started playing catcher, she fell in love with it. And she actually played in high school. She played volleyball for 2 years and then she quit. And for the rest of her time, her last 2 years, she was just all softball, like all year round. My son went back and forth between basketball and football up until his senior year. So he was playing both sports all the way. He played baseball when he was little. And then when he got to high school, it was just football and basketball. And he kept playing them both all the way through and didn't decide until the end of his, like, probably spring of his senior year. And then my youngest, she probably decided in earlier, maybe like sophomore year or so, but she kept playing. She kept playing basketball and she kept doing track, but she knew she was going to play volleyball. So, but she wanted to keep doing those other sports because she liked them. They were fun, you know?
The same thing with both my kids. They didn't really find the one they really loved until later on. And it's funny, my son fell in love with rugby around the same time I did. And that was a sport that I ended up at 15 years old, is going, yeah, I want to play this. And unfortunately, he was starting to play on a club team, and that kind of got shut down with COVID. But I'm hoping he gets back to that, as well as some other sports. So you've kind of outlined the different products and the things that you do and you do offer. How do people find you to reach out if they're interested in pursuing those?
Yes, my website is rcfamilies.com. So if they go there, they can find out about my coaching. They can find out how to connect with me on all my social media platforms, as well as email. So all they have to do is go to my website, rcfamilies.com.
And are the social media links right on your site? So they can go click, like, to what social media do you do? Facebook?
I do Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. Yeah, those are the main ones.
So pretty much the gamut. So there you have it. Words of wisdom from someone. And just out of curiosity, Jess, how long have you actually been doing the life coaching component? Because that's kind of goes hand in hand with what you're doing, right?
Officially only about 3 years, but honestly, unofficially, casually, many, many years.
Yeah, because I remember when we connected like 3 years ago that you were starting to ramp up on that.
Yeah.
And is that, how has that evolved? And just as a last kind of takeaway, what's your, the thing that you love the most doing that when you're doing it?
The thing I love the most about helping parents is when I hear them say after our conversations that they've gone and they've put into place some of the things that we talked about and they've seen a change in them and in their families. That makes it all worthwhile. Like, it totally is rewarding because my desire is truly to help families be healthy and to give them the tools that they want. I can't answer all their problems. I can't resolve all their issues for them, but I can give them tools so that they can figure out and we can work through together on how to solve them.
It's kind of like that epiphany moment as a coach when the kid gets it and the light bulb goes on.
Yeah.
Same kind of deal.
Yeah, parents
have that. Thank you for helping them out, which is what it's really all about, is that whole serving others and helping them help themselves, right? So I can't thank you enough for doing this. That was a great chat, and it's good to connect with you again. I keep thinking, out of curiosity, Craig was part of that group a couple of years ago. You've been in touch with him of late?
I actually met him in person finally. He was in Nashville, and my son lived in Nashville, and I went up there one time, and I said, hey, I want to meet you. I've never met you in person. So we met at a coffee shop, and every now and then I touch base with him, yeah.
Yeah, really, once in a while, I see an email come from him, and I know he's kind of still doing, but doing a full-time, and we all talked about this, making a living, making a difference is a tough gig, but, you know, I admire the work that you're doing, and families do need this type of support, and I've been trying really hard to get organizations to understand that parent education component. Mm-hmm. Some kind of bought into it, but it's still, let's put money into skill development of the kids, and it's still got work to do on that progress. So hope you stay well. Hope your husband is able to coach some football and the daughter is able to coach with them again at softball. It sounds great that they're doing a tandem. Maybe one of my kids will coach with me again. It remains to be seen. We'll have to play that one by ear. So. Yeah. Really enjoyed the chat. Thanks so much for your time.
It was good to connect with you again.
All right. So stay safe.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can find us on Facebook for Love of the Game, Twitter, TLOTG Conference, and forlovethegame.ca. We'll see you next week for an all-new episode.